Well, a lawn can be the white space around your blooming flowers and trees, or it can be the centerpiece of your home landscape. And when you add parks and sporting fields and other open spaces, golf courses, you're surrounded by more turf than you might think. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along for another edition of Garden Talk. Doug Soldat is an associate professor of soil science at UW-Madison. He specializes in turf grass, always has great information to share about taking care of your lawn and mine. And Doug, great to have you back.
Yeah, good to be here. Thanks, Larry.
Looks like spring is here, at least for part of the state.
Yeah, slowly coming. A lot like last year, actually, where we have this nice, really slow, kind of slow start to the spring.
Yeah, my lawn's looking pretty green.
Starting to green up. Yeah, we're starting to see green up the last couple weeks. So not a lot of growth yet, but some.
But at least it's green.
It's green. Yeah.
Better than that white stuff. Although,
I'm
afraid there's still some white stuff in parts of the state.
Yeah, you can still find it. Yeah, well, up north they're in trouble.
We talk about turf grass. How do you define turf grass?
Turf, that's the first day of our introductory turf grass management course, and it just kind of stops everybody in their tracks. Well, I never really thought about what the definition of that is. But so turf is a contiguous community of plants that can persist traffic and defoliation. So contiguous community, you can completely cover the ground, and it can withstand that traffic tolerance and the grazing. And so a turf grass is simply a grass that can do that. And it turns out most of the turfs that we have are grasses. So turf grass is a pretty special type of plant.
Have you seen much damage to at least the lawns in this area in the southern area of the state?
Yeah, not a lot of permanent damage, thankfully. I think there's a lot of superficial stuff, a lot of brown grass. Snow mold was big because of the amount of snow that we had and the length of time. But I think there's nothing unusual this year in terms of how grass is going to come look this summer.
And I know you have some great ideas for minimizing the amount of chemicals. We always talk about a little bit about chemical use on the lawn. What are some good pointers?
Yeah, probably the key to reducing reliance on chemicals is maintaining a thick, dense stand of grass. And the key factors there are the growing environment. So a lot of people struggle with growing grass in the shade. Well, grasses just aren't really made to grow well in the shade. So you're always going to be struggling there. So if you can have a good growing environment with a lot of sun, that's a plus. The second big thing is a healthy soil. And if you don't have a soil that can allow the roots to grow, you're always going to be battling weeds, which do better in those situations. Compaction is something that has to be managed with aerification. You can add compost. And then the final piece of the puzzle is really making sure that you regularly feed the lawn, you fertilize once or twice a year to maintain the density that keeps the weeds out.
Yeah. And what about water? Conserving water resources, another part of having a sustainable lawn?
Yeah, water's is a big issue, and it's going to continue to become a big issue. The couple different ways to look at it. In one sense, if you don't water your lawn over the summer, it's going to survive in most cases. We had one of the worst droughts we've ever seen a couple years ago, and I think people were surprised by how much of the grass did survive. But if you're really interested in keeping weeds out in a non-chemical approach, you might want to think about irrigating during the summer to maintain the grass's competitive ability. Now, if that's not a concern, like I said, our grasses are well evolved to withstand long periods of drought.
My lawn, our lawn, I should say, is you know, I've given up on having a perfect looking lawn. I don't really care because.
Yeah.
My daughter and her friends come over and they kick a soccer ball around, and as long as there's some grass out there.
Right, yeah. So a lot of lawn management is just what your personal preference is, whatever you're into. We work with everybody from roadside turf, which gets mowed maybe once a year, to Miller Park and Lambeau Field, which is like the most intense turf management. So there's a right level for everybody, and we just really at the university try to figure out the best way to do every approach.
place like Miller Park, how often would they be fertilizing and so forth there?
So Miller Park is really, really unusual. I say it's probably one of the hardest places to grow grass in Wisconsin, and mostly because of the shade and the traffic. And that's just a bad combination. So they installed some lights this past off season, so they're going to try to artificially add light to some of those outfield areas that get worn so thin. But in terms of fertility, it's really not too much different than a high-end lawn, because football fields are different because they get so much traffic and the grass gets ripped up. You have to grow it back more, but baseball is more localized, and so the fertility levels are probably lower than you think. They have a lot of challenges with light levels.
The light, yeah, especially I would imagine with that dome shot.
Yeah.
Not going to get a lot of light in there.
Mm-hmm.
Susan in Wisconsin Dells has a question for you. Hi, Susan. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a question about zoysia grass. Our neighbor planted it in his yard quite a few years ago, and then he tried to kill it because he didn't care for it. Well, it came back, and now it's invading my yard. I do not like the texture of it. I don't like it, how it's brown unless it's wet and hot. And I have about a quarter circle, 10-foot radius of this grass that's starting to invade. So how do I get rid of it? And then how do I keep it from coming back into my yard again?
Yeah, that's a tough one, Susan. Zoysia grass, as Susan mentioned, it's a warm season grass, so it only really thrives in summer, and it's brown. I mean, it's going to be really white or brown right now, and it won't even show a hint of green until probably June. And so it's pretty undesirable. We definitely do not recommend it for normal situations in Wisconsin. But like you said, it's really, really difficult to control once it starts to get established. So chemically, there's almost nothing you can do about it. What we would recommend would be to sod cut out that area, plant new sod. And then the areas where it's invading, when you see it kind of creeping in, you're going to have to cut a strip of sod and replace it with bluegrass, and you're going to have to keep managing that creeping.
Is there a way to put down a barrier, sort of a metal no?
Yeah, you could try it. I mean, it's something that may help if it's is to run some landscaping liner down along the spot between the two yards. But even in my landscaping beds, I see the bluegrass, which creeps in a similar way, will jump there and go underneath. So it's going to be a constant struggle, unfortunately. But I think you'll buy yourself a couple years at least by sod cutting out the contamination now and replacing it.
How deep do I have to go to get it out? Am I talking like 4 or 5 inches? Will I ever get the roots out?
Would you get a sod cutter for this? Rent one?
I'd rent a sod cutter or hire somebody to do it. You know, that's going to be a concern, is that if you cut, let's say, an inch out, there's likely going to be rhizomes down below that inch that have the potential to come up through it. Okay. But that's going to be a really slow process. I would not recommend taking out six inches of soil, because I think you have so many other potential areas where it's going to contaminate that it's more going to be, you're going to have to manage this problem. So I think by sod cutting out like an inch and then bringing in new sod occasionally is going to be your best bet.
If I tried to do something different there in that semicircle and landscaped it or something, what kind of a landscape product could I put down that leaves don't get caught in, and I could clean it out rather easily if I brought stones in or something?
Yeah, you could totally remove it and then put landscape weed fabric down, and that would prevent the zoysia grass from popping up through there. That's definitely an option as well.
Okay. I always have a problem with mulching, because the leaves get caught, and I never can figure out how to clean mulch out the leaves without taking the mulch with me. And then if you do stones, then do you blow that out? And I've never found an adequate cover for a landscaped area. So,
yeah, that's one of the nice things about the grass, is the mower can kind of mulch those leaves up. But I'm afraid I don't have a good recommendation for you on that.
All right.
All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Susan. Appreciate it. Jim in Libertyville, Illinois, we are on to you. Thank you for calling.
Hi, this is Jim from Libertyville, Illinois, and I have a big circle of dirt in my front yard and a big circle of dirt in my backyard. Each one is perfectly centered around a tree.
Do you know what kind of tree?
Well, swamp white oak in the back and the crimson king maple in front.
Okay.
And I also have to say two things. Number one, this has taken years to appear. It's been very gradual. And the other thing is that I have not trimmed these trees. You know how most people want to be able to cut the grass without branches getting in the way?
Yeah.
I haven't done that. I thought, you know what, if trees were meant to be trimmed at 5 feet off the ground, they would sort of grow there. I don't know whether that's very wise or not, but that may be related.
Yeah, so I think it sounds like classic shade pressure with a combination of tree root competition for water and nutrients. So I would recommend just mulching those circles and forget about growing grass down there. And that what you described, that kind of slow progression, is just classic competition for light and nutrients. And grasses just weren't evolved to tolerate those conditions. So pick the area where the shade is mostly where most of the shade and root pressure are, and just mulch it. There's just, from what you described, there's very little you can do to prevent that from coming. Maples have a really dense shade, and then a swamp oak with low-lying branches are going to put basically the same effect, and even worse because it holds onto the leaves all throughout the fall, when usually that's the only time shaded grass can take advantage of the sun.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck, Jim. Thank you for calling. Those swamp white oaks, they're pretty old.
Oh, yeah.
They're beautiful trees, aren't they?
For sure.
You got a really nice one, at least one really nice one on our campus at the UW.
Oh, yeah.
Madison is beautiful.
Right by the horticulture building. Yeah. And what's under it? Mulch.
Mulch. That's exactly right.
There's no grass under that tree.
No grass, but it's a beautiful tree. And it looks good with the mulch. As a matter of fact, the mulch looks fine. Luke in Evansville, Indiana, thanks for calling. Hi.
Good morning, Larry, and good morning to your guest.
Good morning.
Hi, Luke.
I have a problem. I have basically, it's a shade issue again, trying to establish grass underneath a flowering cherry, and it's kind of a shady area next to the house. I'm wondering what would be the best way to naturally fertilize that area to kind of give it a better start, because the soil doesn't seem very nutrient rich. It looks very sandy, kind of a loam. What would you recommend?
Yeah, natural fertilization, there's a lot of good options. There's a lot of natural organic based fertilizers out there. Milorganite's kind of the oldest classic example. But a lot of the dairy farms are producing a composted manure that you can find, or a chicken manure that's a wonderful fertilizer. We test many products like that at the University Research Center every year. Another option I would suggest would be compost, especially if you have sandy soils. Compost contains nutrients, and when you put it down, that big slug of organic matter also holds water and will help those seedlings grow. So I'd say compost or a natural organic fertilizer are going to be good choices for you.
All right, thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. And Bob in Plover, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, good morning. I'd like to make a couple comments. My background is actually I'm a former grad of horticulture in Madison over 40 years ago with Bob Newman and Hasekus and those guys.
Oh, great,
so,
yeah.
I've been in the business for many years, also part of the sports turf, which Doug speaks at and is good at. Anyway, I wanted to add a couple things. Zoysia grass, you can probably, once it's actively growing, try Roundup and wait 10 days, 14 days, and then see how that works and go beyond 6 to 8 inches beyond the infestation point. And that may help because it's much like bent grass. It creeps out that way as a southern grass. So that might be a thing that you want to try. So I want to comment on controlling that. That might work for them. And then as far as the person mulching, I also get involved. I'm a certified arborist. I get involved with arborist work, too. We go 3 to 4 feet minimum recommendation from mulch beneath any trees because we found research 300 to 400% increased root biomass when you have mulch beneath a tree versus grass. So I'd recommend at least a minimum of 3 to 4 feet. And if they want to put some plants in there, there's lists of shallow rooted perennials that one can use beneath the trees. But otherwise, like you said, mulch it. And these people that have lawns, I do that every day. And if they have less than half day sun, their lawn is not going to do well. And so I just have them make it into a walkway or a perennial bed or something other than that.
Yeah.
With that, that's all. But thank you for the good program.
All right, Bob.
Yeah,
thanks a lot, Bob, for calling. Appreciate it. And you make some good points.
Yeah, absolutely. The what he said, half day, that's a good recommendation. If half of the day you're shaded, it's going to start being a struggle. So
yeah.
You look at the lawn, you get 4 or 5 hours of sunlight, and it's kind of right on the borderline.
And he mentioned a couple of names that brought back some good memories.
Yeah.
Bob Newman, Ed Hasselkus, those are guys that were on this program many, many times.
Yeah.
A long time ago now for those two fellas. But right here and now is Doug Soldat. Doug is associate professor in soil science at the UW-Madison. Talking Lawns, Judith Sears Poisson, answering your calls when you call in here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest today, Doug Soldat, Talking Lawns. Just to mention, next week on Garden Talk, Melinda Myers is back with us. She's going to talk about how to create a colorful garden filled with birds and butterflies and blossoms, plus some great ideas for Mother's Day plants and flowers. That's next week on Garden Talk. And while we're at it, if you're in the northern part of the state, I hope you will come out for a meet and greet with me in Washburn, Wisconsin, right in the top of the state. It's Thursday, May 15th from 6 o'clock to 7:30. And Thursday, May 15th, 6 to 7:30, we're going to raise a toast to spring's arrival. We'll be enjoying some food from Coco's, a chance to win some prizes, for you to win some prizes. I know we've got Big Top Chautauqua tickets and probably some books as well. And other goody things. For more information, I hope you'll call 608-263-9525. That's 608-263-9525. Again, that's coming up on Thursday, May 15th, right the day after my birthday. And then on Friday the 16th, you can join us in Bayfield because we'll be broadcasting from Bayfield in Bloom at the Bayfield Pavilion there. So that's why we're up there, to do that show and then to hopefully meet you. So if you're in the Washburn area, Thursday, May 15th, 6 to 7:30, be there or be square. Call 608-263-9525 to learn some more. And we need to, it's kind of getting an idea, we would like an idea of how many are showing up because we're going to have food and so forth and drink, and we need to have a number. So we've got that information, too, on Facebook, Judith reminds me. So go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. She's going to put it up on top so you can readily find it. And Kevin in Boston has found us, as a matter of fact, by phone. Let's go there. Hi, Kevin. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. Hey, on my lawn, I have spots of grass that's not growing, just random spots here and there. Any suggestions?
Can you tell me a little bit maybe about the lawn? Is it shady or moss and maybe sandy soils up there?
Kind of a little bit of sandy soil. We did have some topsoil brought in, but some of the area is shady. Some of the area has direct sunlight, but it's all over the lawn. That doesn't seem to make a difference.
And then is there anything that appears to be different about the grass that isn't growing or dying? Does it look like a different type of grass?
Nope, it all looks the same, and I guess we were told to seed Madison Park seed, I guess is what the name of the seed was.
Okay, and then, so how big are these spots?
Some are probably like 6 inches in diameter, some are just 4 inches, nothing too huge, but they're just all over, or they almost look like divots in the, you know, from golfing, like divots.
That's
interesting.
Yeah, this is... It's hard to diagnose problems over a picture, but it's even harder to do it over the phone. I would maybe if you could find my email address, maybe Judith will put it up on the Facebook page, and maybe send me some pictures. I'm gonna have a much better chance. But the Madison Parks grass mix is a safe bet. Because it contains Kentucky bluegrass, fine fescue, perennial ryegrass, a whole bunch of different turf grasses, and if it's an ecological problem, one of those grasses is likely to take over and start to fill. So add seed to those thin areas. Now is a decent time to start thinking about seeding, but fall is really the best time.
And what is your email, by the way?
My email is djsoldat, S-O-L-D-A-T, at wisc.edu.
DJ Soldat.
Yep.
Okay.
S-O-L-D-A-T. Yep.
At wisc.edu.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call.
Yeah, I look forward to those pictures, Kevin.
Yeah, send those photos. Ben in Fox Valley, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, guys. Hey, thanks a lot. And I'm sorry if I'm covering something you already covered. I joined a little late. But so I had a purchased a home that had a new septic system put in, a mound system, and the septic guys, you know, they're not the greatest lawn planting guys in the world sometimes, and they didn't do a very good job, a lot of weeds and stuff. So I didn't know, what if you just go over, do I have, I mean, there is some grass in there, you know, they must have put down some seed. There's a lot of weeds and stuff. Do I have to start from scratch, round up the whole bit, or can you just kind of go over the prep, how I should handle that? I'd like to do it now just because I don't want it to last all summer like that. And then maybe some recommendations of seed and cover after the fact.
Yeah, I put some prairie mix down.
Yeah, some sort of no-mow mix. If you're going to mow it, so mowing is probably the best herbicide. So what I would do is wait a little bit and just mow it a few times, and it's going to take out some of the pressure. And then are these mostly broadleaf weeds?
Yeah, yep.
Mm-hmm. Then I wouldn't recommend going the Roundup and reseeding option. Actually, if you're okay with putting down a broad spectrum broadleaf weed control on that area, you'll be amazed at how quickly they go away, and then a fertilizer application to encourage the grass to thicken up. And it should be okay as long as you have some, like you said, some of the grass surviving from the original planting. You shouldn't need to reseed it.
Mm-hmm. So don't reseed it at all, even if it's kind of sparingly. I mean, it's...
Yeah, if it is, if you have like dinner plate size gaps, that's about the area where I say now you need to reseed it. And I would go with a mix that contains a high amount of a fine fescue, and those are usually sold as, they either call them shady mixes, or, you know, something about turf in the shade, or sometimes they call it low maintenance, no maintenance. Yep. But those fine fescue grasses are going to do best on that sandy mound.
What about, and just about one last thing, like, okay, so, you know, there's the broad manufactured, I don't want to mention names or anything, but you hear ads all the time about this grass seed that you get at big box stores.
Yeah.
Where do you get stuff that is specifically for Wisconsin? Are you better off doing that than getting that big box store stuff?
Yeah, you're probably better off going to your local garden retailer, and they do have their specialized mixes for Wisconsin mixed up for them. So you want to talk to somebody that appears to be pretty knowledgeable in grass seed mixes. You can find what you're looking for at a big box store if you know what you're looking for, but usually I find that the more hype there is around something, the less you really need it.
Yeah.
Some of those mixes are pretty, you know, a lot of advertising and not a lot of science behind them.
Mm-hmm. Hey, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Good
for
luck.
Calling. Doug Soldat, our guest, associate professor in soil science at UW-Madison. Bill and DePere, get to you next. You can join us, too, by the way, as you listen in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go ahead and post on my Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You can post a question or a comment there. And now let's go to Bill and DePere. Hi, Bill.
Good morning.
Morning. What can we do for
you? I have a problem with creeping bent grass. It's in a section of my lawn, and we thought we had it eradicated. It came back with a vengeance, and now it seems to be spreading further into the lawn.
Yeah, that's a good. It's in a wet area, relatively wet, I would guess.
It's wet and probably a limited amount of topsoil, so there's a good clay.
Yeah, shallow rooted.
Yeah.
That's classic growing environment for creeping bentgrass. So this is, for the people listening earlier, this is a very similar problem to the zoysia grass, where this grass creeps. It moves by stolons above the ground. It spreads in these patches, and it tends to really be out-competing other grasses in wet, shallow-soiled areas. Unfortunately, I think Bob called in and talked about spraying Roundup to an area 6 inches outside of it. That's one, and then removing the sod and bringing in new stuff is one option. But there, aside from digging it out or a non-selective approach like that, there's not much you can do. And you said you already took care of it once and it came back. And
yeah, and we used Roundup, and I think the thing that we, in reflection, the thing that we should have done was let it come back the second time
and then do it again. Yeah.
And then even wait the third time and hit it again.
Yeah, that's
my question.
Right. Go ahead.
My question is if you wait, is there any benefit from going in and doing a shallow tilling and trying to get the rhizomes broken up to get them to germinate again?
Yeah, no, that's a great idea and a great approach too. So by tilling that up, exposing them, encouraging them to grow, and then taking them out after they start, I mean, that's a good way to get rid of that that propagation material for sure.
And if we were looking at timing this to get ready for, I would call it a fall seeding,
yeah,
of fresh grass, of good grass, how early should we start this regimen? Because it will take some time, I would imagine.
Yeah, you could probably start right about now. Grasses are starting to actively grow, and then maybe schedule every 6 weeks until you're ready to resod or reseed in the fall. Around August 15th to September 15th is the window where you want to be ready to plant.
Okay. And you would recommend something like Roundup for the non-selective?
Yeah, that's definitely the chemical option. Other people have used like just tarping over the area and let the heat burn out the vegetative material, but Roundup's definitely an option as well.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Bill. Thank you for calling. And we had a Facebook question from Carolyn wondering about aerating and dethatching. She said, is it better to aerate the lawn or is it better to dethatch the lawn? And what time of the year is best?
No, this is a great one. Yeah, thanks. So this aerating and dethatching, a lot of people will have a dethatcher unit out this spring. And that's kind of just been a historical thing that a lot of people like to do in the spring. And sometimes they call them power rakes, but essentially it's this machine that has these vertical blades that spin around and kind of rip up all the brown grass and the thatch if you have it. And I actually think that this is probably does more harm than good in most cases, because what we don't see a ton of thatch in lawns today. Fertilization rates have dropped, and thatch is actually a woody type stemmy material, mm-hmm, like really rough. So when you reach down and feel at the bottom of your grass, you should feel soft grass blade tissue, brown, doesn't matter what color it is, that's not thatch. If you have woody, stemmy material, that's thatch. And it's okay to have some thatch, but if it starts getting thicker than a half inch or an inch, then you want to consider dethatching. Fall is probably the best time to do it. But when you do it in the spring, the problem that you're basically doing is just really damaging the grass. You're causing a lot of stress. You're opening up you're exposing the soil, and then the weeds are germinating right now. So you're basically preparing the lawn to be invaded by weeds, especially if you don't have a thatch problem. So I think I'd like to see people do dethatching in the fall only if they have thatch, which is a relatively small subset of the population relative to what I see around my neighborhood and the places I'm driving. So on to aeration, and this is the process where the machine is usually on a drum, and it's pulling out these soil cores that are maybe half-inch diameter, inch or two, 3 inches deep if you're lucky. And this is a really good practice for areas that get used heavily, kids, dogs, small areas. That your feet do a lot of compaction on that lawn, and in that, especially in that top inch or two. So aeration is a really good practice if you have a high use lawn, and that's something that probably needs to be done every fall. We don't like to do it in the spring because you're damaging the soil, you're pulling up the soil and allowing weed seeds to potentially come in. But I like aeration in the fall. I got kids and a dog, and I mean that's what we're doing this fall.
Yeah, there we go. Sarah in West Bend, let's go to you.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We have a yard with real good topsoil, thick heavy grass, but we've got a problem with creeping Charlie coming in from our neighbor's yard, and I've noticed. It's been that way for years. We even hired a large company to do, you know, your treatments throughout the summer, and really found that very costly and didn't really see the benefit of it. So we normally do fertilize in spring and fall, but, you know, from what I've researched, we see it in, like, your low-lying grassy areas. You know, we do have some areas where it's well over an acre where we don't have maybe the most level spots, and you know, we do get, like, right now we have some standing water, so it does like the moisture, I know, but I'm wondering if you can recommend how to get rid of it, or if we should be adding more soil to these areas and reseeding.
Yeah, it's one of the top weeds in lawns, and usually it's an ecological problem like you describe. Is there shade as well in that area?
Parts where it's growing, yes.
Yeah. So it's usually that, and that's the reason it's always going to be a battle, is because that particular weed, creeping Charlie or ground ivy, prefers heavy shade and moist soils. And those are the two things that grasses hate. They don't like shade, and they don't like wet soil. So trying to flip that natural balance is just a constant struggle. So there's really, So bringing in some more soil and raising up the area may help. That's something you can try. Usually the light pressure is still a main factor. So selectively pruning or trying to open up some gaps in the canopy to allow more sunlight is going to be a non-chemical control. Chemically, the best time to do creeping Charlie is around the first time of the last frost, and then again right when it flowers in the spring. Those are the two times it's most susceptible to chemical control. But again, if the ecology isn't right, you're never going to win that battle. Yeah,
no.
So you've got to do something about the growing conditions.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks very much for calling. Wherever the lawn is weak, wherever the grass is weak, that's where it comes.
Right.
And it just kind of, if you've got a healthy lawn,
yeah,
you're not going to have it.
Right. And we have, you know, we have it out at the research station, which is in full sun, well-drained soils, and we never have trouble getting rid of it.
Right.
Because we have the conditions that are good for healthy grass.
Frank in St. Germain, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Well, I got a quick question. My father, I guess I'm from a younger, less hardworking generation. My father stresses the value of raking the lawn. And with these high-powered blowers now, I think I do just as good of a job on my lawn versus his. And I'm wondering, is there any benefit to raking the lawn over a high-powered blower?
Yeah, I think there's a physical fitness benefit there. But I really can't think of an agronomic difference. I mean, I prefer raking because I think those air blowers are annoying, you know, Sunday morning when you're trying to read the paper and drink your coffee. But other than that, no, getting the leaves off is a really important practice because, like we said earlier, if in shaded areas, the only time that grass has the ability to capture sunlight is really after the leaves fall off. So you want to get them off. I think an air blower or rake, either one's fine.
Wonderful.
Out.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Frank, for calling. You can join in, too. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Love to hear from you. And Jennifer in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Jen.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a sod question specifically. Our yard, we have a typical city lot in Milwaukee, and our yard right now is about half exposed soil because we removed some pavers. And so I want to know about choosing a sod to either match the existing grass, or is it a better idea just to resod the entire area? It's not terribly big.
So the first thing that popped into my head is that you want to probably remove the compaction underneath those pavers and make sure,
and
really make sure that that soil's healthy and loose. And then to answer your question of what you should put there, if you go with a sod, how old is the other grass that's?
I don't know. We haven't lived there very long, so okay. I'm not sure.
Is it a shady area or is it sunny?
It's sunny. We have an ash tree, but it's the canopy is not very dense at all, so we get a lot of filtered light under the tree, and there's just one tree in the yard, so the rest gets a lot of sun throughout.
And so the grass looks nice and thick there?
Yeah, the grass is pretty healthy, so that's why I'm debating about
it. It's probably bluegrass.
I don't know if I would have, it's just going to look silly to have a big seam right down the middle, I would assume. I don't know how long it takes to blend together.
Yeah, you're going to, that's basically the choice you're faced with. I think if you do go sod, you're going to have a different shade of green. It's just the way that these new cultivars happen. So if that's, but that will slowly integrate over time as the other grass creeps in or that grass creeps out. If that's not desirable, the other thing you can do is it's kind of like picking colors on the wall or your carpet. You can actually go and pick different varieties of sod, and some are going to be less green than others. So we work with sod producers who grow all different colors of grass. I mean, maybe you don't have access to many choices, but some grasses you might be able to find out there that'll match more closely.
Okay, and the one last question, I'm sorry. Because the grass grows fairly well under the tree, how would I go about sodding under the tree if I did choose to tear out everything? Because I know, obviously, I can't dig down the soil around the tree.
Yeah, usually depending on how the surface rooting is, usually you'll be able to cut through decently. I mean, sometimes you kind of end up just raising up the area and kind of sodding on top of whatever you're able to remove. But yeah, usually when you're dealing with tree roots, it's not the easiest thing in the world to be cutting out. I mean, if it was me, I would just deal with the seam and
just seed it. Okay.
Yeah.
You could be, those tree roots are pretty shallow on ash. And so, you know, you could be damaging that tree if you start digging around too much.
So it's not, I mean, seeding now is fine.
Is
this the right time to seed?
No, it's an okay time to seed. We prefer to seed in late August or early September. Sure. That's the best time. But, I mean, right about now is probably the next best time.
Okay.
All right.
Another option. Thanks so much, guys. Happy spring.
Yeah, to you as well. And we'll get to Eileen and Madison in just a minute. A reminder, we're talking with Doug Soldat, Associate Professor of Soil Science at UW-Madison. He teaches, among other things, turf grass nutrient and water management. And that's kind of what we're talking about here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in for this edition of Garden Talk, visiting with Doug Soldat from the UW-Madison about your lawn and mine. And questions, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Go to my Facebook page. You can post a question there at The Larry Mueller Show. Eileen in Madison, you are next. Hi, Eileen.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm so glad to talk to you, but I had to call because of the zoysia grass conversation you're having.
Yeah.
I love zoysia grass. I have some in my yard, and for anybody who wants a low-maintenance yard and will put up with just a little bit of late grass blooming and early dying back in the fall, it's absolutely the thickest, most weed-free. What I do is I have some, so I keep pushing plugs and putting them in my yard wherever I can, hoping it grows. Unfortunately,
it's so slow.
I know these other people said it grew really fast. Mine grows quite slowly.
It's very slow.
But I only mow it like 4 times a year, and after I mow it, I spray Miracle-Gro food on it. I don't fertilize or anything. And it's absolutely lush and weed-free. So I just wanted to say for anybody who is I know that there have been several callers and considering it an invasive thing. I was just lucky enough to have some in my yard, and I just wanted to tell that.
Yeah. No, it's it's definitely an option. I mean, it's not for everybody, and so it is brown, and it's brown and slower to green up, and it shuts down quicker in the fall. We have some on campus here over some of the steam tunnels because it's the only thing that'll survive those really hot soil temperatures. It is low maintenance. It's very slow growing. It's very thick grass. But I mean, before you go in and start planting zoysia in your lawn, make sure that you see what it looks like every month of the year up here in Wisconsin. Because it's not for everybody, but like Eileen says, some people are perfectly happy with it.
All right. There you go. Thanks, Eileen, for calling. And we have, Vicky called to say that divots in the lawn, remember we were talking about divots in the lawn a little earlier, are from squirrels. And she's probably right. Those little kind of divots.
Burying nuts
and digging them back up again. She has that issue at her place. And Terry in Green Bay has a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, Terry.
Hi. I just have a quick question. We're looking to go more organic with our lawn care. We went organic all last year and wanted to just get away from herbicides and other types of over-the-counter kind of fertilizers. And I was just wondering, we have some clover that's starting to move in, and we were told by the organic company that, and actually several organic places, that the clover moving in says that your grass is getting back into balance, your lawn is, kind of, you know, taking care of itself to repair from the herbicides. So I'm wondering, with all of this, stuff moving in, is there a way besides aerating in the spring and the fall that and overseeding that we can kind of crowd out some of those other weeds that might be coming in?
Yeah.
And can you give it?
Yeah, good stuff there. Yeah, the clover is a legume, and it takes its nitrogen from the air. And some people it's a weed, other people it's not a weed. And it's an indicator of a low nitrogen system. That's why it's out competing the grass. So, and it also returns some nitrogen to the soil, which the grass surrounding grass can benefit from it. But it mostly uses that fixed nitrogen for its own growth.
Used to be in lawn mixes, wasn't it?
Exactly. It used to be sold in lawn mixes because it would provide nitrogen before chemical fertilizers were widely available.
Sure.
So I would say the two most important things for organic lawn care, well, the number one thing is keeping the lawn dense with an organic fertilizer or compost. So adding that spring and fall at least is important.
Like Milorganite?
Milorganite would be a good option, or even just
Chickadee
doo doo. Those are both organic fertilizers, but consider doing like a compost application too, because that can improve the soil as well. But yeah, those organic fertilizers that you mentioned will be great. Maybe a compost application in the spring and the fall is going to thicken it up and help outcompete the weeds. Now, an option for selective broadleaf weed control is it's an herbicide, but it's essentially just iron. Iron, HEDTA, is the chelating agent, and you spray that on broadleaf weeds and it kills them, but it won't kill the lawn. I think it's one of the brands is Ortho EcoSense, but there might be a couple other versions of that.
Okay.
But so
can I broadcast that?
No, that's kind of a spot spray thing.
Oh, I see.
It's cost prohibitive in the broadcast.
Okay. But so over the years, am I able to actually bring the lawn into more of a just total grass without the herbicides?
It's going to be a struggle. I think it's pretty unnatural to have 100% just one type of species. It's kind of natural to have kind of a mix. So if you're going to go for an organic version, you might want to start thinking about accepting a couple different plant communities in that turf, other than just the turf grass. But yeah, there's a growing number of options for weed control that are organic or reduced risk.
Okay, thank you very much.
So, good luck.
Thanks a lot, Terry. And on to Ben in Richland Center. Hi, Ben. Thanks for calling.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
I'm calling regarding thistle that I have in my backyard. It's taken over about a quarter of the backyard, and it was definitely a problem last summer. I'm looking to take care of it throughout this summer?
Yeah, thistles are really tough to control. And obviously they're definitely one of those weeds that I don't put in a kind of wishy-washy category, because if you're using the lawn and you step on a thistle, that's not
okay.
You
don't want that.
So
yeah, the kids don't necessarily like it all.
No, exactly. So I think how many is this, like a uniform cover, a thistle?
Certainly so. Obviously it just has each individual plant, but the plants grow quite sizable throughout the season.
And how
Thick are they?
Every couple feet.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. Yes.
And then, so what have you done in the past to try to control them?
I've actually dug them up. Is the best way of doing it that I found. Other than that, nothing.
So I would say that this would be a good time to go at it with a chemical control. In this case, if you're digging them up, chances are you're missing some of the roots, or so it can grow back. But if you you know, now is not the best time to control thistle, unfortunately. The best time would be later in the fall. But you can certainly try now. It'll knock them back quite a bit. And then I would actually recommend a second application in the fall of a broadleaf herbicide to, and you can do it spot spray, walk around one by one and just individually spray the plants, or you can do a broadcast. But that's probably going to be needed to really control the thistle populations, because they're pretty resistant to a lot of different methods.
Okay, that probably answers my question as far as doing anything not chemically based.
It's tough. Digging them out is an option. You can try the there's acetic acid, but a lot of the non chemical or the organic type chemicals are they burn down the leaves. And they don't necessarily translocate to the root to kill the entire plant, and so then you get regrowth. So if non-chemical is what you're after, just be persistent with either the acetic acid or the iron HEDTA that I was talking about, and continually, you know, after several applications, you might start to see reduced grow back. But
okay.
it is a challenge with thistles. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Keep in mind, those are chemicals too.
And yeah,
well, that's true.
Right.
And I have heard things most recently regarding cornmeal. Would that do anything?
Corn gluten meal is it's a pre-emergent herbicide, so it prevents seeds from germinating. So it would prevent any thistles that were germinating from seed, but that's usually not the main
culprit.
That's usually not the problem. They're coming back from a taproot or vegetative structure.
Oh. Okay, thank you.
Yep, thanks, man.
Good luck.
Lee in Green Bay, hello.
Yeah, good morning.
Morning.
I would like to ask Doug if he knows anything about the commercial television, good old Bob Vila, about Grassology.
Yeah, I haven't seen the commercial. There was a conversation going on Twitter a couple weeks ago about Grassology, and we were all kind of joking about it. And we looked at one of the people on Twitter sent me the label of what was in the grass mix. And it's a really questionable mix. I think it's close to being okay, but, and there's nothing special about it at all. It's just it's a mostly fine fescues, which are low maintenance grass, like a low-mo, no-mo mix that you can find almost anywhere. And we recommend those a lot. They're great. They're great for certain situations. But they threw in 10% tall fescue. And tall fescue is, it sounds like fine fescue, but it's nowhere near. In that type of mix, it's going to look like a clumpy weed. It's going to be extremely unattractive. And I can't imagine the reason they put that in there. So I definitely avoid the Grassology mix based on that little bit of tall fescue. Tall fescue is great if you want to plant 80 or 90% of it, but when you start going down 10%, it stands out like a sore thumb. It's a really, really bad choice.
Why they would put that in?
I have no idea.
Got a good deal on this.
But yeah, that's kind of what I was alluding to, and I say be wary of the hype, because they talk about that stuff as it's the greatest thing, but it's really just a blend of some pretty common grasses that we're familiar with.
There you go, Lee. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. John in Madison has dogs and brown spots in the lawn. Is there a connection? And if so, any solutions?
Yeah, that's another one of the top problems, and there's not a lot of good solutions for this particular problem. My experience is it's related to the type of dog you have and the either the salt contents or the pH of their urine. So some dogs have no problem, never kill the grass. Other dogs, it's just like a flamethrower. Every time they go, it's just dead. And so the probably the most reliable solution would be to follow the dog with like a bucket of water to dilute the urine, and that's just it's just not feasible for many cases. So training the dog to go in one certain area that you can repair periodically is a solution, but usually it's on the dog end of fixing that problem rather than the grass side.
You ever heard of the story that people always call and say, somebody told me to feed my dog tomato juice.
Yeah,
and they swear by it.
I
have no idea why that would work.
Yeah, I don't either. And I say, talk to your vet. You know, if you start changing the dog's diet, you don't want that to come from the grass guy, right? You want that to come from your vet. So before you mess with your dog's diet, I would say talk to your vet. But yeah, I've heard that too, for sure.
People, they swear by it, but I think you're right about talking to the vet. The next time I have Sandy Sawchuck on my show, I'm going to have to...
Yeah, there you go.
I'm going to have to ask her about that and see what she has to say about tomatoes.
Maybe we can solve a problem here.
maybe we can.
Put our heads together.
Oh, man. Tell you what, we're talking with Doug Soldat. Doug is an associate professor of soil science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Been a guest on our show many times. He teaches, among other things, turf grass, nutrient, and water management, and he's been doing it a few years now. Always great to have him with us for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And as always, thank you for listening. Great to have you with us here on this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest, Doug Soldat, who is with us to offer you some advice on how to grow your lawn, grow the lawn that you want, and what kinds of turf might be best for your growing conditions. He'll take your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And Doug, callers online, let's go back to the phones and Mike in Rice Lake. Mike, thank you for calling. Hi.
Good morning, guys. After the snow finally melted, which wasn't very long ago, I noticed my lawn had been attacked by moles or something like that, left trails all of bare spots all over my lawn. So that's the first thing I want to know, if I have to reseed them areas and anything that we can do about this critter, whatever it is. And secondly, while I was out there, I noticed the lawn even more than usual. It's really rough, and I use a rider, and it really shakes you on a normal year, but now it's really worse. Do those lawn rollers help to level out your lawn, and is that detrimental to your lawn, and would you want to do that in the spring when the lawn is really wet?
Good questions. And so we'll start with the first one. I think they're probably voles with a V, V-O-L-E-S, and these are basically meadow mice that chew these little runways all throughout the lawn. And thankfully, they chew on the grass blades and the stems, but they usually don't kill the grass to the point where you have to reseed. So with fertilization around Memorial Day, warmer temperatures, those should go away. Now to the second question about the bumpiness, I'm always kind of on the fence about this one because, on one hand you get that it can be from frost heaving, maybe it could be from rodents too, but those bumps, are one way that you increase the aeration of the soil and it allows the roots to grow more healthily. But some people, like you said, it's not an acceptable thing. So then in that case, lawn rolling would be okay as long as you know that you're compacting the soil and you're kind of creating worse conditions for the roots to grow. So a roller attached to your riding, that would be something you could do to smooth down those bumps. But yeah, you are compacting the soil, which is never something that we really like to do a lot of.
There you go. Thank you, Mike. Diane in Elkhart Lake. Hi, thanks for calling.
Thank you. I love your show. I have two questions. I live surrounded by woods, and I see a lot of little dig holes in my lawn. And I wanted to know if milky spore is a good way grubs in the lawn.
Yeah, milky spore is a bacteria that's sold as a powder that you can apply, and it's suppressive of Japanese beetle grubs. So that's the only type of grub it's going to control. And if that is the problem you're going to have, there's a chance that milky spore could suppress the populations. But because it is a live agent, the environmental conditions play a big role in how effective it will be. And so the best time to apply the milky spore product would be when the soil temperatures are between 65, 70 degrees, which is usually going to put us into late May, early June. And you need to water that in, or there needs to be rain to move that powder down into the soil. And the way milky spore bacteria work is by the they have to be consumed by the Japanese beetle grubs, and then the grubs become infected and die. So it's not going to eradicate populations, but if it's successful, if all those things fall into place, you will see lower populations.
Mm-hmm. You might, and you know, it might be squirrels again too.
Yeah, it could be something. So yeah, identifying the pest is usually the first thing. So that's why I want to make sure that you know you have a Japanese beetle problem before you attempt to control.
Well, I know I have raccoons because I've seen them, but I don't get the typical dead circle. I don't get that at all.
Do you see them on your ornamentals? Do you notice Japanese beetles flying around? They like to chew on roses and lindens and
grapes.
Just
a little bit. Not a lot. I do get some, but I don't get an infestation of them.
Yeah. There may be something else going on.
Yeah, maybe a thing we like to do is kind of dig down and look for the grubs, and the best time to do that might be around July and see how many you can count. And if there's a whole bunch of them in a small area, then you might be a good candidate for the milky spore. But if not, it might just be some other natural things that would be better off not treated.
Okay. And then you were talking earlier about shade with grass, and I was wondering, I do have a fair amount of shade because I'm surrounded by woods, and I've kind of overseeded some with the Scots grass for shade. Is that really, does that work well? Or because I kind of would like to put more down to thicken up my lawn, but
yeah, so like we said, you know, I'll show growing grass in the shade is one big challenge. And the best grasses for doing that are a group called the fine fescues, which include creeping red fescue, hard fescue, chewings fescue. So grass seed, I like to ignore all the advertisements and all the names, and I flip it over, and there's this label on the back that tells you exactly which seeds are in the bag. And so for a shady site, those grasses, creeping red fescue, chewings fine fescue, hard fescue, those are the ones I'm looking for. And so I don't care what else they say. So if that Scott's shade mix has a high percentage of those grasses, then it's a relatively good mix.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Jenny in Door County, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, thank you. This is a great show as always, Larry. Doug, big question for you. We bought our house about 10 years ago, and it had kind of a mangy lawn to start with. And then we did several remodeling projects. And in the course of that, every single time we bought grass from a different place. So we've got quite a patchwork going. And we're trying to figure out how in the world we're going to have the entire lawn aerated this year because it's very compacted. But we're in Door County, so we're on bedrock. And we don't have a whole lot of soil, but, you know, enough to support some grasses. But the big question is, how do we get a uniform appearance throughout the lawn? Do you have to take everything up and start over again, or...
Yeah, that's a tough one. And see, that's the thing. We have all different people, all different desires. And so this is, you know, if uniformity is something that you're after, probably the only way you're ever going to achieve that maximum uniformity is by starting over and planting everything the same. It's going to be very hard to get something perfectly uniform from the kind of collection of grasses and weeds that you have now. So, probably the best way to make the mottled mix look uniform is to pick a relatively high mowing height, fertilize a couple times a year, and then just keep sharp mower blade, mow it high. And then, you know, I usually notice differences in non-uniformity when the grass is growing at different rates. So more frequent mowing usually kind of makes the lawn look more uniform. But if that doesn't cut it for you, I think resodding or reseeding is probably the only thing that'll work. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we've got one area that we really, really like that's a no-mow grass.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we love the way that's coming up.
Sure.
Except right now here in the spring, it looks like a big mat. But,
yeah.
You know, ideally, that's what we'd like to do. So then the best thing we do is just take everything else up and replant. Now, what do you recommend for a low mow? Because what we got, we ordered online. It was a very, very expensive mix. And there's got to be something cheaper than, you know, $20 an ounce for low mow.
$20 an ounce?
Well, I might be exaggerating.
Okay.
I think it was a couple years ago.
Yeah, okay.
It's really expensive, though.
Yeah. I really like Chewing's Fine Fescue. If I was going to redo my lawn in a low-mow fine fescue mix that I wanted a nice color, good, you know, I wanted all the best of both worlds, I would go with exclusively Chewing's Fine Fescue. So I guess that's my favorite of the, but hard fescue, creeping red fescue, they all kind of mix together, but we find the best results in our trials with the Chewing's Fescue down here in Madison, at least.
And
okay.
Neil DeBole will be on the show on May 30th from Prairie Nursery, and he has, I know that Prairie Nursery has a lot of low-mo or no-mo mixes.
Mixes, sure. Yep.
Yeah, as well.
What is his name again?
Neil DeBole. It's Prairie Nursery is the name of his.
Okay.
You can go online and take a look at his. And there are some other nurseries out there, too. Sure. Another thing to do, but Chewing's is, Doug's right. It's a pretty nice.
It's low fertility, low water. You know, the problem with the fescues is they don't do traffic well, and they don't do wet, compacted soils well. But other than that, they're pretty good.
Yeah. You got a bunch of kids, and they like to play soccer. That's not the.
It's going to die.
Yeah. It's going to die.
Yeah.
There you go. Carl in Blanchardville. Hello to you.
Hello there. How are you guys?
Good.
I was just wondering if you could help me out. I am trying to figure out what is the best grass for down here. I mean, in Blanchardville area, for our grass tennis court. We have blue grass at the moment, some sort of a mix, and he's doing okay, but he's never luxuriant. He's never, dried up kind of quickly. He's very well drained.
You have a tennis court right now that you planted bluegrass on?
Correct.
And the root zone is sand?
One more time.
What is the soil like? What is the root zone?
It's, let's see if I remember correctly, it's 9 inches of sand, 10 inches of dirt, and 2 inches of topsoil.
Okay. So grass tennis courts are probably one of the most challenging things on earth to do. And
I should have called you.
Yeah, I would have told you to do synthetic. I think creeping bent grass is the stuff they grow on golf course putting greens. That's probably the grass that you're going to be most successful with. We have a grass tennis court at our research station, and that's what we use. But we grow that on sand, just like a putting green. So essentially, a grass tennis court, you want to treat almost exactly like a golf course putting green, where it gets mowed really short. Bluegrass, I don't think bluegrass wouldn't be the right choice at all. The only other thing you could consider would be perennial ryegrass. But again, the mowing height has to be very, very low. Most grasses don't tolerate that for very long. So bentgrass, this is a much bigger conversation. So why don't we try to touch base after the show?
Okay, that would be fantastic. But just in case, it's creeping
creeping bentgrass.
Bentgrass.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That would be great. Well, thanks a lot.
Good luck, Carl.
And again, your email address is, what is your email?
It's djsoldat@wisc.edu.
All right, Carl, we'll have that up probably up on our Facebook page, too, Doug's email address, so you can get to him to talk a little further about it. Yeah. That, and then, you know, what happens to the creeping bentgrass? The Kentucky bluegrass still wants to get in there.
Yeah. Boy, I don't know. Tennis courts, grass tennis courts, I admire the people that are able to maintain those. That's yeah. That's an intense operation. That's a full-time job. That's 40 hours a week.
Oh, man. Well, it sounds like Carl's into it, though.
Yeah, that's great.
Looks like he set the table, that's yeah. for sure. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. We have some emails I wanted to get to. Jesse in Lancaster wonders whether you could discuss whether a handheld propane flamethrower would be an effective way to manage weeds that are they're trying to creep into the lawn from a nearby field, especially thistles and poison parsnip.
Yeah, this is my favorite one up here on the email board because it reminds me of a story. We went to a turf grass convention in France. And we were walking through this park, and there was this guy with a propane tank and a torch that was it was constantly lit, and he was just literally walking through all the turf areas and burning the weeds with the torch, right? Yep. And so I was with my colleague John Steyer, and we're saying, "Boy, this is a different world than how we do it in the U.S." And then there's a porta potty, and he decides he needs a bathroom break. So he parks his propane torch, and the flame is still going. And he goes into the bathroom.
Oh, my goodness.
And we're sitting here watching this flame just kind of shooting out. And we're thinking, you know, safety and risk and weed control is all relative, isn't it? Yeah, so flaming weeds is absolutely a strategy that can be used. And obviously you're intensely burning back the leaves. And there's a chance it'll regrow from below ground parts. And then you flame them again. But again, you know, you have to be very careful with your tools.
We had an email from Michelle in Sparta. We bought a house where the leaves were never raked for, it's either 1.5 years or 15 years, I'm not sure. And there was an outside dog in the lawn tied up to a doghouse, so there's essentially no grass. How would you suggest we get the grass to grow back? The local co-op says we should till it up, add lime, and then put one of their mixes on it with a straw cover.
Okay, so I'm just going to add a few things to that.
Actually,
it's not a bad recommendation at all, and I'm just going to add a few things. I think the first thing you want to start with is a soil test, and you can get your soil tested at a lot of locations, but if you visit the county extension office, they can help you send it into the Wisconsin soil testing lab, and that will give you the need for lime. And in Sparta, there's a good chance that lime is a good recommendation, but the soil test will tell you exactly how much lime to apply for your lawn. And then I agree that tilling it up and adding the lime at the same time. And then one of their mixes, again, I think this sounds like it's a shady area. If you have a lot of trees and you have a lot of leaves, and then Sparta, you probably have some sandy soils. You're going to want to find a mix that probably has a high percentage of the chewing's fescue, the hard fescue, and the creeping red fescue. A little bit of Kentucky bluegrass in there won't hurt. Want to avoid a lot of ryegrass mix. So annual ryegrass, perennial ryegrass, I like to see those really low or zero levels. So if that's in one of the co-op's mixes, that's right on target. Cover it with straw so you can see about 50% of the ground cover. Best time to do that is going to be starting around August 15th into September 15th, and then you want to make sure that you can keep that lightly watered until that root system starts to take hold.
Jane in Eau Claire, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. Okay, here's my question. We bought a house in January, and as it turned out, the previous owner evidently never canceled their Chemlawn-type lawn service contract. So earlier this week, my husband did the springtime crabgrass preventative and lawn feeding, and the next day we came home, and this company had done it again. And is this going to damage our lawn?
Without knowing the specifics of what your husband and the company put down, it's hard to know for sure. But in general, most of the applications that go out are at a rate where there's a fairly high safety margin. So in this case, it would be a 2X application. It would be very unusual for a 2X application of a fertilizer or a preventive weed control to kill the lawn. So I think you're probably in good shape, but yeah, it's going to be good to get that contract taken care of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Jim and Oshkosh, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi there. Good program.
Thank you.
Yeah, I have half my yard is, quite a bit of shade, and the grass doesn't really do that well. I was wondering about this no mow or low mow grass. How can I apply that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the best time to plant any grass, regardless of what type, is going to be late fall or late summer, early fall. And that's because there's very little weed competition at that time, but it gives the grass enough growing time to kind of thicken up before winter. So the best time to go in and plant is going to be right around August 15th, and no later than September 15th. At that point, you start risking the winter kill problem. Mm-hmm.
There you go. Thanks for calling. We had a caller, Ken, had a comment about thistles. He says, they're biennials. So if you let them blossom and then cut them down right away.
Yeah, right after the flowering. Yeah, before they can set the seed. Yeah, the problem with thistles in the lawn is that you're always cutting them down to some extent. These aren't the thistles that they will grow up, but they also can kind of. They're a little bit plastic, and they can survive in the lawn situation. So after the time of blossom, that's a good time to control with an herbicide as well as cutting, which you do by mowing.
And speaking of herbicides, somebody wanted you to repeat the broadleaf herbicide that doesn't kill the lawn. And when would you apply that?
I imagine they're talking about the organic option. The active ingredient is iron, HEDTA. That's the kind of flip it over, and that's the fine print on the back. That's the active ingredient. The one name brand that I'm familiar with is Ortho EcoSense, but that's any iron HEDTA containing product intended for weed control is not going to kill the grass, but it's going to take care of dandelions and clover and things like that.
And we had a Facebook comment from Kathleen who would like to suggest that people look at the big picture. Do you really need to be devoted to a monoculture lawn? Herbicide applications, could you consider other things? Think of the bee population and the growing worry about environmental chemical use leading to, things like Parkinson's.
Right, and that's something, like I said, everybody has a different perspective, and I'm definitely not here to say that this perspective is wrong or this one's right. What we try to do is minimize, for whatever your goal is, we try to find the recommendations that minimize environmental impact and maximize the agronomic and the functional use of the stand.
Have you been to see the Brewers yet this spring?
I haven't, but I'm looking forward to it.
I tell you what, I love looking at that grass. We talked about that grass at the beginning of the program, and just thinking about how they cross-cut that, and it looks so pretty.
Yeah, so nice.
It is.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
It's Kentucky bluegrass.
Yeah.
So it's it is. Yep. Yeah. And they mow it real low, lower than we would ever recommend for a lawn. And actually, one of their tricks is they put iron on it, and that helps with the stripes. It makes those stripes stand out a little stronger.
Iron. That's the last tip that we're going to hear today from Doug Soldan. But he'll be back, and we'll do it again with him. Doug is an associate professor of soil science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Great to have him along. He'll be back. Monday, we're going to talk about some new research on antibiotic-resistant infections. And then our weather guys will join us as well. So you stay with us in the meantime, because we have lots of good things in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And once again, thank you for listening.